with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Houck.
Good evening, everyone, or good afternoon, wherever you are in the world at this time. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, helping you reclaim that which has always been in you. This broadcast focuses on the integration of spirituality and mental health, which always brings us back to relationships. It is just something that we cannot get around. We are social people indeed, and we sooner or later have to understand how we are in relationship with ourselves and others and even God or the divine. Well, it's my great pleasure to be with you here today and every Tuesday, 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time or 4 o'clock Pacific Time. I'm Dr. James Houck, and if you would like more information about me or to leave me your comments about tonight's show or last week's show, please visit my website at www.reclaimingauthenticity.com. That's www.reclaimingauthenticity, all one word, .com. And if you'd like to be part of the show this evening, please call in at 888-627-6008. 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls in the second half of the show today after we take our break. Well, before we begin tonight, I just want to make a quick announcement about next week's broadcast. I wonder if you've ever been like me and there's times when you just don't know what to say. I think there are times when my wife would agree that I'm never at a loss for words, but that's for another broadcast for sure. But next week's topic is right up that alley, and it's entitled, Cat Got Your Tongue? Saying Four Things That Matter the Most. Well, many times we often find ourselves in those situations, those awkward times when we are at a loss for words and we're just searching for, what do I say in this moment? I don't want to say something stupid, but I want to say something appropriate and meaningful. And whenever we find these four things that we should be saying, the four things that matter the most, we understand just what a tremendous amount of healing they can bring to our relationships. So be sure to tune in next week for Cat Got Your Tongue, saying four things that matter the most. Well, how is your heart today? I hope that wherever you are safe and at peace. Well, let's begin tonight's broadcast with a question, kind of a virtual show of hands, as it were. How many of you, at one time or another, or maybe you're still doing it now, but how many of you have ever searched your family tree? How many of you have ever searched your family tree? Okay. Come on, you can get your hands up. Yep, it's okay. All right, you can put them down now. I think, all of us have thought about searching our family tree from time to time, and we have some great websites out there just that really would help us to give us the tools to be able to do this. We have Ancestry.com. We have FindMyPast.com, FamilySearch.com, GenealogyBank.com. And there are indeed many, many more websites out there just to help us to find out exactly who came before us, who's in our family line. And even today we have, the DNA testing like 23andMe, which shows us from a geographical, standpoint, our ethnic background in terms of our genetic makeup. And all of these ancestry searches have been gaining popularity over the years. But it's interesting that not everybody shares this enthusiasm for searching their family tree. I remember there was a woman that I had met, and she could care less about knowing who's in her family line. In fact, she said to me one day, "Now, you be careful when you start shaking that family tree, because you never know what's going to fall out." And I had never forgotten that. It was interesting because she didn't use the word, you never know who, you know, who's going to fall out. But she said, what? Like, what's going to find out? Just be careful what you're going to find. And as I said, that stayed with me, that her comment, as if there's something bad or something shocking or disappointing to searching a family tree. And because I come from the standpoint that searching family trees are fun and they're exciting and they all have a sense of mystery. And if we're honest with each other tonight, you know, perhaps we all hope to find that famous person, that famous ancestor out there, somebody who made a great contribution to society or who left their mark in very profound ways. Somebody that we can, you know, tell everybody about the next day at work and brag about and make ourselves feel important. Well, even though we have the wonders of technology and we have these websites that really help us search our ancestry, we can only go back so far, you know, perhaps to the 1800s or the 1700s, 1600s, maybe 1500s. And then, you know, depending on how well the records were kept, the trail might start to grow cold, depending on just who and what you end up finding. But when you think about it, our genealogy goes back much, much further than these genealogy sites can take us. And I'm going to save this for another broadcast when we have more time, but I'd like us to consider what it means to be in a relationship with the God who knows us before we were born, who saw our unformed bodies. There's a famous passage in the book of Jeremiah in the Old Testament where God tells the people, before you were born, I knew you. And you have to wonder, what did that look like? How did we look? And so forth. And yet that relationship with God was always there from the very, very, very beginning. Well, let's say that we can trace our family trees back as far as we can, and we just so happen to run into an ancestor or two who is a little shady, no pun intended. You know? Or perhaps we started shaking our family tree and something or someone unexpectedly fell out. Maybe we have discovered a bad apple or two. Now what do we do? You know, it certainly makes for interesting conversations, and you know, we are kind of at a crossroads when we come to that person. Do we want to know more about them? Do we simply want to ignore them? Do we just quickly skip over them? Do we become discouraged and filled with shame, believing that, you know, one bad apple spoils the whole tree? Well, I don't think we have to. Well, I don't know if you've ever read another genealogy, famous people or otherwise, and just see who's who in a family's line. But there's one genealogy that just truly has always fascinated me. And I've read it and reread it and reread it just to make sense of it. And it's the genealogy of Jesus. And perhaps the reason I'm so fascinated by this genealogy is because whenever I read this account in the first chapter of Matthew's gospel, I'm truly amazed at why in the world would Matthew ever include this genealogy in the first place? Because if you go back through the history of the people that he mentions, the thing starts to read like an R-rated version of who's who. I mean, there were some pretty seedy characters, you know, back in the line. There was people who committed all kinds of evil acts. Some people were guilty of rape. Some people guilty of murder. Some people guilty of lying and cheating and stealing. Some people caught in adultery. But there were also some very kind and loving and righteous people, too. But why did Matthew find it necessary to include this genealogy in his good news? What was his point? What was his purpose? What was the rhyme and reason behind it? Well, there's actually many different schools of thought out there as to why in the world would Matthew even include this genealogy with just so many, if we want to stay with the metaphor, bad apples in the family tree. Some scholars out there actually believe that Matthew included this genealogy because he wanted to establish the truth that Jesus came through the kingly line of David. Still, other scholars believe that Matthew included this genealogy in order to fulfill what the prophets had spoken about Jesus, you know, the prophets of the Old Testament. And yet there are still others out there who just simply don't know. Well, I want to propose just a slightly different perspective on how do we understand this genealogy of Jesus, and what do we do when we understand that some people in his family line, his lineage, were very evil, if we want to say that, or unrighteous, the things that they did. And whenever we do this, whenever we look at this genealogy from a different perspective here in a moment, it really brings us into how do we integrate our own genealogy, let alone how do we integrate spirituality and mental health, that even in spite of the individuals that were in the family tree of Jesus and even looking at our own genealogy, we realize that in spite of human interaction, it really didn't stop Jesus from coming. Bad apples on a family tree didn't stop the grace of God. The Spirit of God continued despite human interactions down through the generations and over and over and over again. And whenever we understand our own genealogy and we go back through our own history, we can also discover that the grace of God has never stopped either. But the grace of God can never be thwarted. Even in the lives of those who have yet to be born, those who are going to come after us in the family line. And however far our genealogy goes out, our genealogy can extend, all of us could extend for another 1,000 or 2,000 years. We don't know. But one thing we do know is that the grace of God will always be there. And in spite of our past, here we are. But how do we reconcile with those who have come before us that may have been involved in some pretty horrific and damaging behaviors? How do we come to a sense of peace about who we are today, knowing that perhaps the family name is not as stellar as we would like to be? Well, we got to start at the beginning. We have to look at and understand, how do we even talk about our families? How do we share those stories? All of us are part of lineages that carry stories, that oral tradition, perhaps sitting around the dinner table or another family get-together. And this is something that I emphasize with people that I counsel. We certainly talk about family trees, and it's amazing the different reactions that people have, because for the most part, I'm finding that, you know, some people are just not too proud of where they've come from or who they've come from. It's almost as if they're trying to get out from under the family stories that keep them emotionally and psychologically tied to this woundedness that they carry. Because one of the things that people often struggle with the most is not only getting out from the family history, but how they do this. They think that either by moving away from a family or, you know, going off to school, even going into another profession, that will do it. That will quell the noise inside their hearts and their minds and these wounds and these just simple reminders of it doesn't matter where you go in life, you'll always be one of us. Don't forget who you are. Don't forget where you came from. Don't get too big for your britches, and so on and so on and so on. And those kinds of messages just play over and over again. And no matter how hard they try, some people simply cannot change the narrative. It's like being stuck, you know, with a record. You remember those days, don't you? Now that we have CDs and everything else. And the good old days whenever you would put on a record and the thing would start to skip. And then you would have to get out, what, a nickel? And you would have to carefully balance it on the arm that had the needle. And hopefully the weight of the nickel would just move it beyond the, you know, the part that skips, that little schema. Same thing with our minds. Same thing with our hearts. We get into this kind of stuck narrative where it just goes around and around and around and around and again, and you know, over and over again. And we just, you know, question ourselves and like, how in the world do I get beyond this? Well, it can be done. I think the first thing we need to do is to listen to how we tell our family stories. Yes, you know, facts and figures and names and places are important, but what's even more significant is how we tell these stories. The words we use. Just think about how you tell your family stories. Maybe if you've never searched your family tree before, maybe if you're going through a family photo album, or if you have a digital camera and you're going through pictures on the internet, or maybe you save them on the cloud. What do you do when you come across a person or two that you're not too proud of? Do you just like quickly dismiss them, or do you think about hitting the delete button? What do you do? What kind of stories do you share about this person and others, and perhaps even yourself, being in your family? Because the words we use are filled with symbols and metaphors. The words we use are positive and negative. The words we use are affirming. Sometimes they might even be frightful. Sometimes they're filled with such great emotion and powerful images. And it's those emotions and images that really stay with us. Well, back in the day, and I mean back in the Victorian era, Alfred Adler, he was an Austrian-born physician, psychotherapist, and he's actually the pioneer of individual psychology. Adler believed that people needed to tell their stories, not only to provide a form to what he referred to as our earliest memories, you know, the stories that we get as, you know, as we grow up. But also, these stories become a blueprint for how we live our lives in relation to others. You see, part of our healing from our past not only involves telling our stories, but also involves reclaiming our empowerment to be able to rewrite these stories that are now life-empowering and affirming. We don't achieve this empowerment from an embellished, delusional view where we just start making things up and we just want to wrap things up in a nice little bow. But instead, we start to tell our stories from a healthier perspective, from a place of healing. We're never going to forget facts and figures and so forth, but the way we tell those stories, is it from a place of woundedness or is it from a place of wholeness? And granted, we may not be able to recall every experience, but for those moments that stand out to us, they serve as something else that Adler referred to as this unconscious logic about how we see ourselves and how we view our relationship with others, and even what's our motivation for our behavior today. We actually can begin to rewrite this narrative by perhaps understanding the times in which our ancestors lived, getting a perspective, understanding what they had to do, maybe to survive or not. I remember as a young boy listening to the same family stories at picnics and holidays and other family gatherings. And I heard these accounts so often that by the time I was a teenager, I could recite them word for word. It was a piece of cake. It was easy to do. Now, with the benefit of hindsight, I also understand that not only did these details change, but also the storytellers' interpretations and attitudes remained the same. It was almost as if you had to tell the story correctly. In fact, there was always what seemed to be this underlying tone of a helplessness or a bitterness or a sadness or a resentment that drove how the story was told. In fact, I came to realize quickly that if I went to retell these stories and I wasn't telling the stories with the same kind of tone of helplessness, bitterness, sadness, or whatever, I wasn't telling the story correctly. And I needed to include these negative emotions if I wanted to share the family story the way it was always remembered. And that always stayed with me. Like, why do we tell our stories from this place of woundedness, and perhaps we're not even aware that we're doing it? But just to come from that perspective of, are we telling the story correctly? If we start to change the tone of how our stories are told? So I think one of the things that would really help us in understanding these stories and how these stories have been handed down, however far back we can go, is just looking at our ancestors and finding those people, you know, as we might refer to them as bad apples on our family tree, trying to understand exactly who they were, how they lived their lives. Perhaps we start digging into the circumstances and the times in which they lived if we don't have a name or a picture to go with them. And as we do that, perhaps we find that our ancestors may have been overwhelmed to the point that their resiliency was just quickly exhausted. Or perhaps it was chipped away over time by relentless oppression of the times in which they lived. Maybe our ancestors had to do certain things that they had to do, not being necessarily proud of what they did, in order to survive or defend themselves or to raise their families or to make ends meet, etc., etc. Maybe our ancestors didn't always make the best decisions or even consider the impact of their decisions and what those impacts had on their relationships, especially to those who have yet to be born. I remember reading one time the Iroquois Nation in their constitution back way, way back in the day. And there was one line in their constitution that always encouraged their people to look out for the welfare of the whole person. Not just, as they put it, in the here and now, but to carefully consider their actions, their attitudes, their behaviors, because what they did and what they do affects up to 7 generations into the future. And that's something for us to consider. If we consider there's a new generation every, let's say, 25 to 40 years, somewhere in that gap, maybe 25 to 30 years, something like that, and we go out 7 generations, that's 210, 15, 20 years, 220 years from now. We have no idea what the world's going to look like. But imagine every thought, every assumption, every story we tell, every aspect of our lives, our behaviors, and so forth, is going to have that kind of an impact on those who have yet to be born. Just like whatever happened to the people back 200 and some odd years ago, going back 7 generations, wherever you want to start your birthday on, and just the impact of what was going on back then, and that the decisions that were being made affect us today. I mean, it really makes you stop and consider just how powerful ancestry is. Well, as we continue digging and digging and digging, because after all, we want to consider learning about our ancestors and where we've come from and who's lived before us as something fun and exciting and a sense of mystery, we just might run into those individuals and perhaps those ancestors that never considered the additional physical or psychological, emotional, or even spiritual burdens that they placed on others because of how they may have benefited from somebody else's work, or perhaps they were burdened themselves. Maybe our ancestors had abused drugs or alcohol. Maybe they struggled with other addictions because it was the only perceived thing to do at the time just to get them out of their pain, that they had to hold themselves together somehow, some way, which only made matters worse then for themselves and their families. Maybe as we start digging around and shaking that family tree, we've become aware that our ancestors may have been just completely unaware of the psychological and emotional roles they played in order to unconsciously maintain the daily chaos of their codependency. Maybe they were caught up in confusion. Maybe they were caught up in some self-sabotaging behaviors that are typically found in families who are struggling with addictions. Maybe we start shaking our family tree and we start going back and we find that perhaps there was a pattern of attempted or completed suicides because the emotional pain and hopelessness in the family was just far too great for anyone to see any other way through problems. Maybe even our ancestors initiated a cycle of physical, emotional, or sexual abuse out of their own experiences of being ridiculed or abused or beaten or shamed. And yet, on the other hand, maybe some of our ancestors, maybe they have been the abusers. Maybe they struck fear in the hearts of others through extortion or greed or manipulation, violence or oppression. Maybe our ancestors were guilty of pulling triggers or exploding bombs that ended the lives of many. Maybe our ancestors turned a blind eye to society's wounded and so-called insignificant people, the people that were being oppressed or tortured or killed, as their hands held the shovels that opened and closed the earth for mass graves. Maybe our ancestors went along with family and community atrocities in order to get along with those in power. And maybe our ancestors reflected a silent indifference in the face of atrocities, and they reaped or they raped the benefits from systems of oppression. I mean, when we start looking into our family line, we have to be prepared to find anything. As I said at the beginning of the show, we have this sense of, I can't wait to see who's in my family line. I hope it's somebody famous to make ourselves feel better. But yet, what do we do? How do we reconcile the history of people that we have come from? Can we get out from under that? Can we tell those stories differently? The answer is yes, it can be done. Well, tonight I want to hear from you about your family line and how you've reconciled with your past. So let's go ahead and take a break. And if you want to be part of the show, call in 888-627-6008, and I will be back in 1 minute. Okay, well, welcome back. Again, you're listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, Integrating Spirituality and Mental Health. I'm your host, Dr. James Houck, and Reclaiming Authenticity is the courage to discover that which has always been in you, your strengths, your gifts, your talents, your graces. We've been reflecting on What do we do whenever we find bad apples in the family tree? This is something that every family either talks about or doesn't talk about. It's an issue that could be very sensitive at times. It could be an issue which then becomes the stories we tell at picnics, birthday celebrations, Thanksgivings, Christmases, Easters, 4th of Julys, whenever the family gets together, the stories start to come out. And I just encourage you to pay attention to how those stories are being told. From what kind of perspective? What's the tone? What kind of emotions are being shared? What's underneath all those stories? Okay. Before I take a call, I do want to share with you one story in particular. It's just always been very precious to my heart, where I've seen healing from, let's say, bad apples in a family tree, and how the trauma landed on a teenage girl, and the family made her out to be the scapegoat until she learned what was really behind the stories that were being told. So time in a counseling session that I had with her, I'll just call her Kayla, a pseudonym here, and she was your typical teenager. Fun, happy, struggled with school, didn't like it sometimes and everything. Had a touch of depression and a little bit of anxiety. And, you know, of course, her mom brings her in and says, metaphorically, fix my kid. My kid is the problem. My kid won't listen to me. My kid this, my kid that. And because Kayla was 15 years old, in the state of Pennsylvania, when you're 15, you can make your own decisions. So we just, you know, politely asked mom to leave the counseling session, and it was just Kayla and I, and we talked. And I just asked her, what's been going on? What's coming up in you? And she started to share how about a year, ago, she was a straight A student. Everything was going fine. She loved her sports. She played field hockey, if I remember. She just had a great time. She had a boyfriend. Everything was wonderful. And then, bam, it all just seemed to change. She went away to summer camp. And when she came back from summer camp, her world was just completely upside down. She didn't do well in school anymore. She had this attitude of just kind of this agitation and depression and anxiety, and the family didn't know what to do with her, so they brought her to me. And as we started to unpack her story, one of the things that she had shared was last semester of the school year, prior to going away to summer camp, she discovered that she was pregnant, and she didn't know what to do. And she was extremely scared and shamed and embarrassed and everything that would go through perhaps a teenager's mind at that time. And she had decided that over the summer months, she would get an abortion. And that's what she did. But it occurred when she went away to camp. So then she just went to the next town over, and she received this abortion, which threw her into all kinds of PTSD and guilt and shame and a lot of struggles with coming to terms with the decision that she made. And she said she was just never the same since. Well, I made the suggestion that at some point, perhaps we can invite mom or grandma into the counseling session. I always love to get three generations, especially when I have a teenager in counseling therapy, just to get the different perspectives. And I was surprised the next week, the day before her appointment, she had called, left a message, and she said, Dr. Houck, is it okay if my mom comes? Is it okay if grandma comes? Because, grandma really wants to come. And I thought, okay, that's fine. Bring them along. And so we sat there, the four of us, And it was interesting, just the seating arrangements. You had the daughter, you had Kayla on the right, mom was right in the middle, and then grandma was at the other end. And I just explained, the work that Kayla and I have been doing, and I thought it would be helpful to bring in, other generations of women to help her understand the different things that she might be go through. And I just said, Kayla, do you want to start? Do you want to share some things? And she went right into her story. It was almost as if she was just, I'm ready to tell it. I'm ready to say it. And she told everything that happened to her about getting pregnant, going through the abortion, summer camp, all that, and just not knowing what to do with just the flood of emotions that just hit her unexpectedly after she had made this decision. And as she was telling her story, I glanced over at her grandmother, and her grandmother started to just very softly weep. And I gently raised my hand almost to call time out for Kayla. I just said, just Kayla, hang on a second. And I said, I said, what's coming up in you? What are you feeling right now? And grandma started to share her own story of how when she was a teenager, she became pregnant and she went and she got an abortion as well. Well, you should have seen the look on the mom's face. Mom couldn't believe it because mom never heard that story before. And as grandma started to share more and more about this story, it was interesting because grandma had at least two or three more generations of previous stories to tell, because she had her mother there with her and her grandmother and her great-grandmother that she was able to remember. So we had up to five generations in that counseling room with us, five, maybe six. And the more grandma talked, the more the daughter talked, more that Kayla talked. And it was just interesting. Mom just kind of blended into the background of the whole conversation, and she didn't really know what to do. She just couldn't believe hearing these stories coming from her daughter and her own mother. And it just seemed at one point in the session that Kayla and her grandmother just reached this beautiful bond of understanding and love and forgiveness. And just, I know how difficult this was for you, Grandma said. Well, I eventually had to bring Mom into the conversation, and I just said, Mom, what are you feeling right now? And Mom's just, she was stupefied. She just like, she was doing one of those numbers where I don't know what to say. I'm a loss for words. I had no idea. And the grandmother then turned to her own daughter and just asked for forgiveness and just said, I know there were times I wasn't the best mother. Please forgive me. I'm so, so sorry. And of course, mom started to break down. They hugged. In fact, all three of them just hugged and cried for the longest time. And what a cleansing that was, emotionally, psychologically, physically, spiritually. Wonderful cleansing that took place among the three generations. Well, that was the only time I had grandma and mom in a counseling session. Kayla kept coming back and, to complete her counseling therapy with me. And she was doing much better. She did go on a very mild antidepressant for a little bit, but started to go back with her and have her retell her story again. I played like Columbo, and I just said, I'm sorry I don't have my notes in front of me, but can you kind of go through your story again? Because I kind of forget, even though I remembered everything. And what really struck me was how Kayla started to retell her story, the facts and figures, in a different way. She told it now from a place of healing and wholeness. She didn't tell her story from a place of woundedness and pain and shame and suffering and misery. She actually had a smile on her face as she was telling her story. and how she realized that in hindsight that she had made a mistake and she wished she never did. And I'm still working on forgiving myself, and I wish, you know, someday I could, you know, ask for forgiveness for my child. But her grades started to improve. She started to treat herself better. She started to treat others around her better. And she kind of walked with a lightness to her. She never, again, walked into my office with slumped shoulders, but she walked with her head up. She was dressed in bright colors instead of like the dark black or the dark blues. How we tell our stories makes all the difference in the world. And if we even write down our stories, that makes those stories even much more powerful, because we see ourselves writing it and just helps our brain process those metaphors and those images and those symbols and the language. It just helps our brains process things much more quickly. But there's a lot that goes into how we tell our stories. And what do we do whenever we go back through the family line and we come across somebody that we just, oh, I don't know about that. Or so that's where it all started. And perhaps understanding that there was an abuse, physical or sexual abuse pattern that started, and it started to come down through the generations and so forth. I would say actually the person that really got me interested in looking at generational therapy, if I'm going to call it that, or looking at family trees, was another family therapist, you know, by the name of Murray Bowen. He did more of the generational healing, where he would like to work with three generations also. And he quickly saw how patterns of behaviors and assumptions and family secrets and addictions and so forth and illnesses and diseases, how all that started to come down through one generation after another, after another, after another. But he also looked at what I would call horizontal relationships, the relationships that are in the here and now. So it would be, let's say we go back to Kayla's situation, it was the relationship between grandma, her mother, and Kayla. So that horizontal relationship, as well as looking back into the relationship, more of that vertical relationship of what's coming down through the family. And I have to say, the teenagers I get, the kids that I get in therapy, they understand this. They it never fails that whenever a parent would bring in a child or a teenager and say, fix my kid, that the kid, the child, the teenager really resents that. They just do not like to be referred to as the problem, because they're certainly well aware of what's going on in the family and how these family stories have been told. They just don't know what to do about it. They just don't have that lived context yet. They just don't have that kind of either hindsight or foresight yet. They'll get there. But usually when I get them, they, part of their angst and part of their disgust is, well, since we know this is in our family, in my family, and nobody's really done anything about it, why does this stuff have to land on me? Why do I have to be the one that has to deal with all this when nobody else could? And that's a golden opportunity right there. Because what usually happens, I get a big smile on my face because I know that they have just found their answer. And I tell them, I said, you know what? The reason why everything started to come down through the family, the whole reason why perhaps something landed on you and that your family couldn't heal it, is because, have you ever considered yourself that you are the strongest one in the family to be able to heal yourself and your family? To stop the cycle of abuse or the cycle of addiction, whatever, from going forward, but to genuinely heal from yourself and perhaps understand that as we go back through the family line, that maybe the family wasn't strong enough to stop it. Maybe the family didn't have the resources. Maybe they didn't just have the ego strength to be able to stand up to it. Maybe they were so wounded themselves. Maybe they were so broken in what they experienced or how they were raised and so forth, that all they could do is just survive. And I tell the teenagers, I said, you know, maybe they had to do what they had to do just to get by and to survive. And guess what? It worked, because here you are with me. And that's no small accident. You are here for a reason. And whenever we reframe looking at family issues, whenever we reframe looking at these family stories, it really brings us empowerment to be able to understand that we're not part of the problem. We can be the solution. We have the insight. The strength is in us. We just need to go and reclaim it. The gifts and the graces and the strengths that we come into this world with already, we can go back in. We can find what happened to those gifts and graces and strengths and insights, and we can use them as tools and as means to bring healing to ourselves, to reframe how we tell those stories, and to heal our family, to heal those going back however far we need to go back, and to understand, to have that awareness of, you know, maybe that was the times in which they lived. I often do a guided imagery with, again, the teenagers or people who are in a situation of wanting to heal their family line. And we go through how, you know, can we forgive our family when we've never met them? How do we forgive family members who've lived so long ago that maybe they had to do what they had to do to get by? Maybe they just went along to get along. Maybe they committed such horrible, shameful acts that it was such a secret, but it was handed down through the generations. How do we forgive them? How do we understand that? How do we make sense of all that? Well, we can forgive them. We can forgive them by first understanding who they were and understanding that perhaps as we come to that moment where we finally get what was going on in our families, to say, okay, I'm aware of this for a reason. Now what do I do? And again, I've seen this in therapy. I've seen this in pastoral settings. I've seen this in, you know, just in other contexts. It is amazing the energy that the healing and the forgiveness sends out. And it doesn't go in a linear, you know, line. I'm sorry, that's redundant, but it doesn't happen linearly. It's not a matter of past, present, future, but the energy, the healing energy, goes out like a starburst in all directions that cuts across time and space. Even how we treat people at the grocery store, or even how we treat people at the gas station, or even how we treat colleagues at work or wherever, because we start to heal, because our families are healing, our relationships heal, no matter who is in that relationship. I've certainly noticed that whenever people have not been able to transform that negative energy, that the tone and how stories are told around tragic events or this certain person did this and such, their stories are certainly told the same each time, every time, every birthday, every picnic, every holiday, every family get together. I guarantee. But whenever healing occurs within the greater context of generations, people do tell these stories much differently. They tell them from a healthier, more holistic perspective. And the reason we can tell these stories differently is because much of the healing involves becoming aware of the former negative perceptions and self-talk that no longer serve us. In other words, we recognize how these cognitive schemas have been simply draining our energy and distorting our perceptions and diminishing our potential for healthier relationships. And whenever we're told by perhaps somebody in our family, or if we hear a voice from a distant family member that says, "Now, don't forget, no matter where you go in this life, you're always one of us." And we feel that pull to, like, you know, don't forget who you are. We also have to realize and claim that there is so much more to us than the stories that are told about us. There's much more to us, to even to the point of how we tell stories about ourselves and who we think we are. There is much, much more to us. Family narratives can be rewritten.
Hey, Don,
not from
namaste.
A fictional standpoint of, oh, I wish this would have
Thank
happened.
Thank you for turning us on.
But by taking an honest look at our families and understanding, yes, these are the people from whom I have come. But we are here, and we are here for a reason. And they were there, and they were there for a reason. It's all about relationships. And it doesn't matter if we've never met our loved ones, people in our family line, or every time we visit a cemetery and we visit their grave, we're carrying on conversations with them in our hearts and in our minds. And perhaps we hear those voices of those old, familiar, life-draining messages. But we can take that back. We can heal that. We can find that peace that perhaps has just so often eluded us. And yet, when we do this, it's interesting. Again, this is a place where God often shows up. It's a place in which the extraordinary part of God starts to tap into the ordinariness of our lives. And we start to allow more and more room for those extraordinary acts and the extraordinary presence of God. And this gives us heed to pay attention more, to have this awareness, to have this understanding. So I encourage you to continue searching your family trees. It is fun. It is a lot of fun, especially if you're a history buff. And just trying to understand the times in which people lived and what that must have been like. But be careful of the romance of looking at the family tree. It's quite tempting to want to glamorize a time in which we can only imagine. But when we come across individuals or we come across those stories that are told in such a way that just starts to really bring us down, or we really feel our energy being drained as a result, it's time to take a serious look at this. It's time to change the narrative. We can do this. We have all that we need to be able to come from a place in our relationships, a place of healing and wholeness, of genuine, authentic love. Genuine, authentic grace. It's always been in us. It always will be in us. We can tap into it. So I encourage you to go back through your family line this week. Take a look. Listen to the stories. Or even if you have to go into, let's say, a state's record keeping or a county's journal, to get the story of what was going on at that time, and whether it be a family crisis or a national crisis. What was just the tone of the nation? What was the tone of the family? And just understanding the times in which they lived and worked and raised families and how they struggled and how they lived out their faith, or were they overcome with grief and hopelessness? These are the people that make up our family tree. We are connected to them. We have a blood-soul connection to them. So I, again, encourage you. Read more about your family tree. Understand it. Have fun with it. And learn to rewrite that narrative, to tell your stories from that healthier place. It has certainly been my pleasure to be with you here this evening.
Oh my gosh,
look forward
I'm here.
To spending this time with you next Tuesday, 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, 4 o'clock Pacific Time. Next week, we will be taking a look at saying the four things that matter the most. Does the cat have your tongue? Take care. Bye-bye.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding to buy a book by Dr. Hauk, it's all there. Just wander on over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Tuesday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time on BBS Radio.